This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In the parasha today, we have four examples of response to situations. We have two wicked people, two evil people responding to situations, and we have two great people responding to situations. The two evil people who respond to situations, one responds inappropriately and one responds appropriately. The two great people who respond to situations, one responds inappropriately and one responds appropriately. Let's have a look at them. The first one is Balak himself. Balak, the king of Moab.
The parasha tells us at the beginning, as we discussed in Shul last night, Vayar Balak ben Tzippor is kol asher oso Yisrael lo'emiri. Balak ben Tzippor saw everything which Yisrael had done to the Emory. And Moab became very terrified, very scared of the people because they were so many. And Rashi explains that the reason for which Balak is afraid, and the reason that it tells us Vayar Balak ben Tzippor, that Balak saw what the Jews had done to the Emory. He saw, not in the sense that he was physically present, he wasn't present. Vayar, and he saw in this case, Rashi explains, doesn't mean that he visually saw, it means that he intellectually perceived, that he understood. And what he understood was that if the two kings that he had hired to protect Moab were unable to do so, that the Jewish people were more mighty than the kings that he had hired to guard him, then he himself had no chance. He deduced a kal vachomer that if the people he hired couldn't withstand the Jewish people, certainly he wouldn't be able to. That's why it says Vayar Balak ben Tzippor. Balak ben Tzippor calculated, he worked it out, that there was no way he could withstand the onslaught that was about to take place from Am Yisrael. And then it says Vayogur Moav b'nei ha'om ma'oid ki ravu, and Moav was very afraid of the people because they were many, which we noted last night forms a contradiction. Rashi says the reason that they were afraid, Rashi says, Lefichach vayogur Moav. The reason they were afraid is because Moav had realized that the two gods couldn't stand up to the Jewish people. So certainly he wouldn't be able to be. That's the reason. Why does the Torah tell us afterwards that Moav was afraid of the people, Kiravu, because they were many? And we answered last night that it's Kiravu doesn't mean only because they were many. Kiravu can also mean because they were great. And Moav, Balak here, understands that the victory of the Jewish people over the previous two kings was based not on military might, it was based not on pure numbers, it was not based on anything that any normal army could counteract, but it was based on Ki Ravu, because that nation was great, because that nation was mighty in a particular way. And that ties up with the Rashi further on, that discusses what did he do about it. So here we have Balak analyzing a situation. We have a nation coming out, a nation of slaves coming out of Egypt, marching through the desert for 40 years, taking on two mighty kings and becoming victorious in that battle. And Balak works out, how come, what did they use to become victorious? What was the element of that victory? Because we need to understand how they achieved that victory in order to know, in order to prepare for his own defense. And in analyzing the situation, he finds that the reason for that victory was Ki Ravu, because there's something great about this people. There's something unique about this people. This people are not an ordinary nation. And he analyzes the situation correctly. Vayar Balak ben Tzippor, he sees, he perceives with correct perception exactly what it was that caused the victory over the two previous kings. But now comes his response. How does he respond to it? Vayomer Moav el ziknei Midyon. He sends messages to the elders of Midyon. Why? Says Rashi. Umero Moav litol etzami Midyon. What brought Moav to ask advice from Midyon? When one asks advice from somebody, one should ask advice from an expert. You don't ask advice from somebody who's not an expert. Where is the expertise of Midyon? Explains Rashi. Kivan shiro is Yisrael noitzchim shaloikim min hakavilam. Since they saw Yisrael were being victorious in a most unnatural way,
Omru, they said, Manhigom Shalelu b'Midyan is Gadol. The leader of this people, the leader of the Jewish people, grew up in Midyan. Nishal mehem mamidosu. Let us inquire from Midyan what in fact was the Midah, what in fact is the characteristic that typifies their leader, Moshe Rabbeinu. We need to understand their leadership in order to understand their victory. And to understand their leadership, let's go to the place where Moshe was raised. Moshe was raised in Midyan. Moshe lived a long time in Midyan. Let's find out from them what he is. Omru lohem, so the experts, the big mevinim, Midyan, said, Ein kecho elo befiv. His power lies only in his mouth. That is where his power is. Omru, so they said, Af anu novi aleim be'odom shekecho befiv. That's the case, so now we understand. Ki ravu, this nation is truly mighty. This nation is great. There's something unique about it. What is unique about it? That uniqueness must lie in its leadership. Let's go to Midyan to find out what is the uniqueness of the leadership. Yes, says Midyan. Ein kecho elo befiv. He is unique. This nation is special. They're led by a man whose kerach, whose might is in his mouth. Well, fine, says Moab. In that case, says Bolak and the nation Moab, we know where we stand. We're dealing with an orator. We're dealing with a person whose might is in his mouth. And we've got to find somebody who can withstand, who can counteract that impact. And they turn to Bilam. They go to Bilam to do the job. So here we have our first example of an inappropriate response from a wicked man. A wicked man, Bolak, analyzes the situation, comes so close to truth, comes so close to the true analysis of it. He understands that this isn't a military victory. He understands that he, under normal circumstances, will not be able to withstand the onslaught of Am Yisrael. He realizes, Ki Ravu, this nation has something magnificent to it. His mistake is then, in order to discover the uniqueness of Am Yisrael, he chooses the wrong experts. He goes to Midyan for advice. And it's true that Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in Midyan, but that doesn't help much. It's like, imagine a human being who grows up in the jungle. And you go in as a man who from childhood spent years and years in the jungle. And we now want to understand this man. He comes out of the jungle. We want to know how to relate to him. So you go to one of the baboons. You find a particularly intelligent baboon. And you say, Makhecha, explain to me, Reb Baboon. What, this man who's lived with you for so many years, what is his greatness? Wherein lies his greatness? What is the baboon going to be able to tell you? He's the brilliance of his intellect. He's a mathematician. What's he going to tell you, the baboon? He has no other way of evaluating except in his own understanding. So it's not sufficient to know a person, to be familiar with a person, in order to be able to define his greatness. One has to be operating on some kind of similar dimension in order to be able to define his greatness. If you want to find the greatness of Moshe, you have to ask somebody from Am Yisrael. You can't ask somebody from Midian. There's nobody in Midian, no matter how well they knew Moshe, there's nobody in Midian who could possibly know Moshe at all. It's not feasible. That's something we need to realize altogether when we evaluate great people, that there are things that are quite beyond us. As the Gemara says, if the Mishonim kamalochim, if the previous generations were like angels, then we're like human beings. If they were like human beings, we're like donkeys, and not like the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoy, just like ordinary old donkeys, says the Gemara. And just as a donkey cannot understand a human being, no matter how long they live together, a donkey can serve a human being for all of its life, but you can't ask the donkey to describe to you the greatness of his master. Wherein lies his greatness? You can't do it. It's not possible. The donkey doesn't have a frame of reference. So a human being cannot describe an angel because it's out of his experience. And so we cannot understand or define the greatness of previous generations. It's out of our realm of experience. It's beyond our ability to relate to. So also Midyan could not define Moshe. And that was Balak's mistake. To go to Midyan for the Eitzah, to ask Midyan, wherein lies the strength of Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to the wrong address. And the advice he gets is just a little bit off the mark, but that little bit off the mark is enough to be totally off the mark. And his response is to hire Bilam. And in hiring Bilam, Bolak chooses an incorrect response. Bilam, an even more wicked man than Bolak, comes along now, and he, after the long to-dos, you remember, backwards and forwards, the Ribbono Shel Olam, accepts the job. He's going to curse Am Yisrael. But it comes out he responds correctly. When it comes to the push, and he stands before Am Yisrael, and he views them from the heights, and he has to pronounce his his curses, using his prophetic insight and his beautiful poetry, Bilam rises to the occasion and responds correctly. The things he says are right. He defines Am Yisrael truly and correctly, and it lands up that what he gives them is brocha, not klala.
The difference between the two, very briefly, apart from the fact, of course, that Bilam is operating under the supervision of the Ribbono Shel Olam, he's saying, as Hashem says to him, you'll say only what I tell you to say. So his inspiration is completely controlled and directed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Quite apart from that, there's something more basic that differs them, one from the other.
Balak's response to Am Yisrael, to the threat of Am Yisrael, was not based on a true perception of what Am Yisrael was. Had he really perceived what they were, he might have responded differently. He might have realized that he really has no chance, he might have sued for peace, he might have tried to organize something, he might have operated differently. But he based it on the belief that Ein Koichu Elo Befiv, that Moshe has only one power, and it's Ein Koichu Elo Befiv, says Midian. He has only one power. One thing about Moshe Rabbeinu, he's an orator. His power is in his mouth. If that's the case, then I know what to do about it. So his response is based on an incorrect perception. Bilam, who is dedicated to the destruction of the Jewish people, perceives them correctly. And when you perceive something correctly, it's difficult to respond incorrectly. An incorrect response is very often the result of incorrect perception. So here we have two people, both of them wicked, both of them not governed by halacha, not governed by Torah, who do their own thing, both responding to Am Yisrael, Balak in an incorrect way for an incorrect perception, and Bilam in a correct way. For in viewing Am Yisrael, he's able to define them and perceive them for what they truly are, and he finds that the curses which he had prepared are just totally inappropriate to the situation. They don't fit the situation at all. They don't match, they don't describe the people he's trying to curse. And in the development of his poetry, he is inspired by what he sees, and what he sees is true. He sees the correct thing, and he builds his definition, he builds his poetry from what he sees, using his prophetic power of perception.
What about the two great people who responded to situations, one correctly and one incorrectly? V'hinei ish mibnei Yisrael bo, and behold, a man from Bnei Yisrael came. And we know that this was a great man. This wasn't just an ordinary man. This was a leader of Bnei Yisrael. Vayakrev el echov es hamidyonis, and he brought the Midianite woman before his brothers, le'enei Moshe, le'enei chol adas Bnei Yisrael, in front of Moshe and in front of all of Adas Bnei Yisrael. V'hema boichim pesach oil moed, and they were crying before the entrance to the oil moed. So what's the background to the story, to the situation there? Says the Midrash. Amra loy eini nishmas ela lo Moshe. Shekach tziva oisi Balak abo shelo nishma ela lo Moshe rabchem. When Zimri wanted to have relations with this Midianite princess, in fact the daughter of Balak, she says, I don't do anything without a heter from Moshe Rabbeinu. We're very proper in our place here. If you want us to have a kind of relationship, that's fine. But please, I want a hechsher from none other than Moshe Rabbeinu, because that's what my father told me. Sh'avi melech, my father's the king, and he instructed me not to do anything without Moshe. Amalah arei ani gadol k'moshe. He says, Zimri said, I'm no less great than Moshe. I'm as great as Talmid Chochem. You can take it from me as well, but it's allowed. Le'enehem ani avioch. I will bring you before them, and I'm not afraid. I'm not doing anything in secret. I'm doing it because I believe it's right, and I'm happy to do it in their presence. Tofso bivluriso ve'evio etzel Moshe. He took her by her hair and he dragged her in front of Moshe. Omar loy ben Amram, zu muteres o asuro. Refers to Moshe, not in a very polite way. Ben Amram, am I allowed to marry this woman or not? Omar loy asuro hilach. Moshe said, it's also, you're not allowed to. What about the wife that you married? Who's your wife after all? She's also a Midianite woman. Why is she any better than this woman? Immediately Moshe's hands became weak and the halacha escaped him. The go kulom bivachia, and they all started to cry. Moshal Ma'adol Adoyim, what can this be compared to? Lebas Melech Shniskashtol Likones Lechupo. This is like a princess who's gotten all dressed up for the chuppah. She's wearing her wedding dress and her wedding jewelry and her makeup, and everything's now ready for the chuppah. Leishev Ba'apiryon, and she's coming to take her place before the wedding, at the place where the bride sits. The Nimtzeis Mekalkeles Im Echod. And she's discovered having an improper relationship with somebody who wasn't her chosen. She nisrufu yedei avia ukruveho. The hands of her father and her parents and her relations become weakened. What can you do? We'll analyze that moshul in a moment. Kach Yisrael b'seif memshono. So Yisrael, after 40 years, chonu ala yardin lavu l'eretz Yisrael. After 40 years of being trained in the desert, of serving the Ribbono shel Olam, of having received the Torah, they finally come and they're encamped at the Yarden, ready to go into Eretz Israel. Vashom nifritzu biznus. And there, these improper relations between the Midianites and the Jews started taking place. Of all places, after 40 years of being trained, as they're about to go into Eretz Israel, the barriers, the proper barriers between the two nations were broken down, and the improper relations were set up between the two nations, between the two sexes. Vrofu yidei Moshe videi tzadikim imoi vahima boichim. And the hands of Moshe and the tzaddikim who were with him became weakened, and they started to cry. So the Midrash says. So there we have this picture of Zimri arrogantly standing with his Midianite princess, challenging the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe feeling himself totally unable and impotent to do anything about it.
What's the moshul? What's the example that the Midrash gives? Imagine the situation. The guests are gathered, the wedding's about to take place, the friends, the parents, the relations, everybody's there, and the caller says, just excuse me for a few minutes, I'll be right back. And they wait and they wait and they wait, doesn't appear. So they said they're looking for her, they can't find her. All of a sudden they find giggles going on behind the bushes there, and they go, and there's the caller with an outsider, with somebody else. What do you do? What do you do now? Do you tell the chosim? Do you raise the alarm? You've got an impossible situation to respond to. An intimate but improper act committed by a public person in public virtually. Because whatever you do now is going to make it worse. If you ignore it, that's terrible. If you raise the alarms, that's equally terrible. You tell the chosim, that's terrible. You tell the parents and family that whatever you do is terrible. You can't respond in any way that's going to bring any good out of it. It's an impossible situation in which to be, that the Medrash has described. A situation which combines intimacy with publicity, with formality. That is a formal occasion, it's a wedding, everything is ready. It's a most impossible, it's a nightmarish situation to be in. How do you respond? The Medrash has designed an example to create the feeling, the atmosphere of there is no response. What do you do? Now there's another Midrash in Shemos, in Parshas Truma, the beginning of Parshas Truma, where the Midrash brings the same story, that Zimri comes and brings this princess and asks Moshe, same story. But here the Midrash inserts a little discussion that takes place between Hashem and Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, Moshe, are you standing there crying while this is all going on? Where is all your wisdom? A little while ago, one word from you and Korach got swallowed up. You challenged the whole revolution of Korach, and you destroyed that revolution with a word from your mouth. And now you stand here quietly praying and crying. Is that the response? So the Ribbono shel Olam criticizes Moshe's apparent helplessness. Omele Moshe, so Moshe answers, quoting a pasuk from Mishlei, "Ein chochma vein tvuna vein etzel neged Hashem." He says, "This is not the time for wisdom," says Moshe Rabbeinu. There is no wisdom that can respond to this situation correctly. This is something so grotesque. This is something so disgusting. That only you can handle it, Ribbono shel Olam. And we see here that Moshe was really waiting for the Ribbono shel Olam to strike them dead, to do something, to open the ground like he did with Korach, because Moshe felt that anything that a Beis Din could do wouldn't be sufficient and wouldn't be an appropriate response to the enormity of what was happening. It needed an immediate response, it needed something dramatic, and Moshe felt that there was nothing that a human being had, no power, no ability, no tool that a human being had to be able to respond appropriately, just like the case of the wedding. There's nothing to do that would solve the situation, that would sort it out. What really should do is, what should really happen in that situation of the wedding is there should be a bolt of lightning and the color should be struck by it, and that's the end of the story. That will solve everybody's problem. Nobody has to say anything. Nobody has to do anything. They'll have a levaya instead of a chuppah, and everybody will live happily ever after. That's the end of it. But if we're going to leave it to human beings to get involved, how are we going to get involved in a way which is going to bring anything positive? And so Moshe throws up his hands in despair and cries and prays and says, there's nothing I can do. And here we have our example of a great man responding on his level. Again, as we said earlier on, there's no way, just as the Midianites couldn't understand Moshe Rabbeinu, we're not much better. There's no way we can understand Moshe Rabbeinu. Nevertheless, Moshe is criticized by the Ribbono Shel Olam for this moment's hesitation. And that's all it was. It was a moment of hesitation at which point Pinchas climbs in. But that moment of hesitation was an inappropriate response. What was the response? The response was, I cannot respond. There is nothing I can do that would be appropriate. And the Ribbono Shel Olam's answer is, there is no situation in life where no response is appropriate. Every situation demands a response. One kind of a response or another kind of response. But if something happens in your presence, if something happens about which you're aware, it requires a response. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened there. It's there to challenge you. It's there to draw greatness out of you. It's there to make you respond. And there's no such thing as Ein Chochma Vein Tfuna, that there is nothing that wisdom can do. This is so severe, this is so great. In every situation, no matter how complex, there is a correct response. And the human being has to find that response, and he has to respond in that way under all circumstances.
What about Pinchas?
Pinchas, we see, is the example of the great man who responds correctly. The Medrash goes on in Shemos to tell us, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yodea ani mi muchon ladov hazeh. I know who is ready for this. If you're hesitating, Moshe, I've got somebody who's ready to act. No time for hesitation now. Maksiv Achorov, what's written after that in the Pasuk? Sus muchon l'yoy milchomo u'l'Hashem ha'tushua. A horse is ready for the day of war, and Hashem wins. What's mean? A horse is ready for a day of war? Omer Rabbi Yossi Dorash Pinchas Be'atzmoy. Pinchas worked this out himself. Uma im hasushu noise nafshu l'yoy milchomo. Afilu humeis noise nafshu al baylov. A horse, when he goes out to war, is willing to sacrifice his life. He goes into the battle, he charges in, although he sees blood and he sees weapons and he hears the noise of war and he sees horses being killed and men being killed, it doesn't matter. He takes the rider into the battle and he's willing to sacrifice his life. There isn't a moment's hesitation in the horse's mind. That's what the horse is. Ani al kedusha shmoi shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu alachas kama vekama? How much more so I must see myself as a horse carrying my rider, and my rider is the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I have to plow into the war. And if the result of that is that I will be killed, that's tough luck. Because the din is, in a case such as this, where a person performs such a gross act of Chilul Hashem publicly, the din is Kanoim Poigim Boy, one is permitted to kill him. Not just anybody, one has to be a Kanoi. We won't discuss now the qualifications for being a Kanoi, but in case anybody has any bright ideas, none of us are Kanoi. But theoretically, a person who qualifies for that status, which Pinchas was, Poigim Boy, are allowed to kill him without a trial, without anything, just an immediate, spontaneous response. But if Zimri was quick enough, he would be entitled to save himself by killing Pinchas. It's not the same as when a Beis Din gives out a death sentence. If a Beis Din gives out a death sentence, the accused is not entitled to self-defense. He can't say, one second, they're coming to kill me. And the Torah says, if they're coming to kill you, get them first. So he goes and kills the executioner. You can't do that. Or kill the judge. If Beis Din meets out a death sentence, it has to be carried out. There is no defense. Not so in the case of Kanoi and Poigim Boy. That's the risk that the Kanoi has to take. He has to understand and know that the recipient of his Kanos, the person who is going to be killed, is fully entitled to take steps to protect himself. And therefore Pinchas says that doesn't matter. Just as a horse goes into battle to glorify its master, so I need to go into battle to glorify the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he does that.
And in fact, the Medrash on our Sedra says that the reason that Moshe hesitated such, because the Medrash asks, "Hema boichim, these people were crying." This Moshe Rabbeinu, who when he came down from Har Sinai, saw the 600,000 people and stood against them when they were dancing around the eagle and challenged them, you'll remember, and made them do tshuva and re-established his command over them. That Moshe Rabbeinu, now Verofu Yodov, now all of a sudden he's weak, he can't handle the situation. So the psychologist would say, sure, he was only a man, he was a young man at the time of the Egil, he was only 80, now he's 120. You can't expect a man of 120 to act with the same kind of vigor and courage and leadership that a man of 80 does, but the Medrash doesn't accept that as the answer. There's no difference. That power, that forcefulness of character that he had then, he should have had now as well. Why didn't he act in that way? It was brought about, that moment of hesitation was brought about so that Moshe should have, so that Pinchas should have the opportunity of climbing in to do that which only Pinchas could do. That which was set aside for Pinchas' mission, for his job, there had to be that moment of hesitation in Moshe Rabbeinu to allow Pinchas the opportunity. Although the Medrash goes on and says, Ulefi shenis'atzel, and because Moshe Rabbeinu was Nisatzel, it's a strong word to use, and it's meant, it's intended in the minutest of quantity and quality. Because Moshe was lazy, so to say, because there was hesitation, because there was that moment of thinking, this is not a time for me to get involved, Ribbono Shel Olam, this you have to handle yourself. That moment of hesitation caused the fact that Lo Yodo Ishes Kvurosoi, that nobody knows where Moshe's burial place is. Which on one hand is brought by Chazal as being a great shvach, that Moshe is buried in a place nobody knows where it is, but here we see that that's brought as a punishment. That although it was brought about so that Pinchas would get his opportunity, nevertheless the fact was Moshe hesitated, and that was his own free will. And that hesitation cost Moshe Rabbeinu the knowledge of where he's buried. That he has an unknown burial place, which isn't a nice thing. So, of course, despite all the good things about it, and the way Moshe died, and the sneers with Moshe, with which Moshe died, and so on and so forth, all of that is correct, but at the end of the day, nobody knows where he's buried. And that's a little bit of a chisas hakovod, it's a tiny diminution of the kovod of Moshe, which resulted from that moment of hesitation, during which he felt that the Ribbono Shel Olam should be acting, that this was no time for him to act himself. And the Medrash concludes saying that one sees from here to what extent the Ribbono Shel Olam is medakdekim at tzadikim at kichut asayro, how the Ribbono Shel Olam is precise with the tzadikim to a hair's breadth, that the slightest deviation from that which is correct and true, the way that they should operate, the Ribbono Shel Olam responds with enormous punishment. Be that as it may, what we see here is the remaining response, the response of Pinchas. If we analyze Moshe Rabbeinu's response or lack of response, what was it that brought him to that feeling that I can't do anything about it? It was the truth of his perception. Sometimes when we perceive a situation in all its detail, it is so enormous that it paralyzes us into inactivity. There were people who claimed that the war criminal should not be tried. There were people who claimed that Eichmann should not be tried. That no human being has the right, or that the crime was too great for any human being to try. In a sense, that sounds very nice and sounds very poetic. That every situation needs a response. Whether that response is adequate or not, that's a different discussion. But it needs a response. What was unique about Pinchas' response? The Medrash goes on and says, "Vayar Pinchas ben Elozor."
And Pinchas ben Elozor saw. Interesting that the Sedra starts with a Vayar and ends with a Vayar. Starts with Vayar Bolok. Bolok saw, he perceived, and he acted incorrectly. He didn't perceive correctly. Here it also says, "Vayar Pinchas ben Elozor ben Aaron Akin." And Pinchas saw this. Ask the Medrash, was Pinchas the only one who saw it? V'chulam lo yiro, did everybody not see it? V'aksiv le'enei Moshe ol'enei kol adaz b'nei Yisrael. Zimri acted in the presence of Moshe and all the people of Yisrael. Eloro maise v'nizkar halocha. What was important about Zimri is he saw the act and remembered the halocha. Whereas in the case of Moshe, nis'almo mimenu halocha. In that moment of hesitation, the halocha escaped him. The halacha of kanoim poigim boy, that in this situation a kanoi is entitled to kill the offending person.
with Pinchas that wasn't the case. Ro Maisev and Iskar Halacha. What's the role of Maisa? Why does the Torah emphasize that? Vayar Pinchas. Pinchas saw and then he remembered what to do. That means before he saw, he also didn't remember. When it was being discussed theoretically, he couldn't help. When people said, what will happen if Zimri will go ahead and do this? What should we do? Pinchas couldn't help. It was only Vayar when he saw it happening, then Vinizkar Halochi, he remembered the Halochi immediately. And in that we have a very clear statement as to the nature of Halochi. Every situation creates within us or demands from us a response. If we don't respond, then what? There's no such thing as we don't respond. We do respond. Unless we're blind. If we pretend not to see, if we don't relate to the world around us, then yes, then we're not living beings and we don't respond. Just as stones don't respond to things taking place around them, so there are many human beings that don't respond to things taking place about them because they're not human beings, they're not living, they're stones. But if a person is living and he sees what's taking place around him, he always responds. The question is his response a formulated response or is it a reflex response? If it's a reflex response, then we find ourselves being manipulated and affected by our environment. We are reacting, we're not responding. We are reacting to circumstances which are taking place outside of us. And we cease to be balabatim over ourselves, we cease to be our own masters. We are now controlled by our circumstances. If, however, we formulate our responses, then we are controlling ourselves and our circumstances. We're controlling our environments. And that's how it has to be. That's why there's no real place for moodiness. I pointed out before in the marriage shiurim that according to the Rambam, it would appear that women are entitled to a certain degree of license when it comes to moodiness. But men are not. Men are not entitled to any license when it comes to moodiness because we are able to formulate our responses to situations. There's no need for a situation to get us down. Just as a situation doesn't have to elate us, we can decide when we want to be elated and what we want to be elated about. So we can decide when we want to be depressed and what we want to be depressed about. Comes a Tisha B'Av, it's a time to get depressed. It's not a Tisha B'Av, it's not a time to get depressed. And there's no reason for circumstances to depress us. We are able to respond, we are able to formulate responses to all situations. But what happens, the situation of the wedding that was described in the Medrash, what happens, there are many situations in life where we don't know how to respond. That's where the beauty of Halacha comes in. Because what Halacha is a body of correct response to every situation in life. There is no situation in life which does not find in Halacha the correct response to that situation. And that's what Halacha is. And one has to understand that Halacha is not meant to be studied and practiced as something separate from circumstance, as something separate from the environment, as something which has to be imposed upon the environment. That's not what halacha is. Halacha is vayar Pinchas ben Elozo. What does it mean? Vayar ro'o maise v'nizkar halacha. One has to see the halacha in the environment. One has to see the halacha in the circumstance. The halacha is the correct response, and one has to study it, not just to study to know what does one do, but to study and see why this is the correct response, to perceive and appreciate the correctness of the halachic response to each situation. Which means that to understand halacha properly, it's not sufficient just to study Shulchan Aruch. To understand halacha properly, you have to study the Metzius too, you have to study the world around you. To understand why that's the correct response, you have to understand the circumstance. Which means you have to understand the Bria, you have to understand human nature, you have to understand human relationships, and see within that why the correct, the desired response is the halachic one. And the Gemara tells us many times that if it weren't for the Torah, we would be able to learn a great portion of the Torah from the study of the environment. This is not, the Torah is not imposing something that is foreign. The Torah is merely illuminating our eyes to the way, to what we should see theoretically even without the Torah. It says we would learn certain midas, certain characteristics we would learn from the animals. The fact that the Ovis kept the Torah before the Torah was given, centuries before the Torah was given, the Torah was being kept in all of its minute detail already. Some say because of prophecy, and some say it was worked out. That there was such clear perception by the Ovis of the Metzius, of reality, of the environment, of circumstance, that they in their purity were able to devise the correct responses for each one of those situations, which happened to match the Torah's response. Why not? A pure soul who analyzes a situation and formulates a true and correct response will hit the nail on the head, he'll hit the Torah. Just we don't have that purity,
And as the nation developed, that purity was becoming more and more elusive. And so the Torah was given to us as a body of knowledge as to how to respond. And more than that, Limud HaTorah doesn't mean just knowing how to respond. That's learning dinim. That's not what Limud HaTorah is. Limud HaTorah means learning the correctness, the truth, the beauty of the responses selected by the Torah for each and every circumstance that occurs in life. And that's the beauty of learning Shulchan Aruch. When one learns Shulchan Aruch, one shouldn't learn Shulchan Aruch just as a list of do's and don'ts. You're learning Shulchan Aruch, you're learning human situations. Each seif, each paragraph in Shulchan Aruch is a described situation with a correct response. And what you have to analyze when you're studying that is not just what is the correct response, but why is that the correct response? Why is that the true thing to do? And that needs to be the learning of one's Gemara as well, which is why the whole of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, is given in case study. It's not given with rules. Do this, don't do this, theory. There's no theory. No theory of law. The whole of Mishnayos is case studies. If this happens and this happens and this is the halacha. If this is the situation and that is the situation and this is the halacha. Each Mishnah in every perek of Shas is a case study. A case, a real situation is described. Every medrash. That's the way the Torah teaches us, not with theory. Every medrash, Chumash, Tanakh, Mishnah, Gemara is all dealing with real cases. When such and such happens, this is what you do. So that you should see the halacha in the context of life, not out of the context of life. It has to be integrated, it has to grow out of life, not be imposed on life. What the halacha wants from us is to discover and perceive the truth of the Torah in life and in the environment. Not to know that there's some truth that comes from Shemayim and that has to be imposed on the earth in which we live. And that's perhaps a slightly further development into the Medrash, which we've discussed before, right in the beginning in Bereishis, where Hashem creates man. You remember the famous Medrash, and Hashem discusses it with the different groups up in Shemayim. And the angels formed groups. Some said man should be created, some said he shouldn't. Chesed omer yiboro shu gomer chasodim. Chesed said, sure we should make man. He's a gomer chasodim, he does kindness. Ve'emes omer al yiboro shu kulo shkorim. And Emes said, don't create man. Man cannot live according to perfect truth. Tzedek omer yiboro shu, he said, tzedokus. Tzedek says man must be created. He does tzedokah, he does righteous deeds. Sholom omer al yiboro de kulek toto. Sholem says, don't. If you want peace in the world, don't create human beings. There'll be arguments, machlokes. We need to keep the human beings out of it. What did Hashem do? Not al emes v'yishlichu l'oretz. He took emes and he threw it down to the ground. Adoi dichtiv, as it says in Daniel, vatishlach emes arzo, and you threw emes to the ground. Amru maloch ha'shoes lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ribeinu ha'alu, ma'ato mevazu tachsis al tichsi yeshelach. Emes, how can you take emes and throw it out? Emes is your sign, it's your essence. How can you take emes and throw that away? So the Ribbono Shelom, this is the way we learned the Medrash. The Ribbono Shelom answers, Taile emes min ha'oretz. I want emes to come from the earth, not from here. And we've learned it the way that Ksus HaChoshen learns it in his Akdoma, in his opening, where what the Ribbono Shelom wants is the human intellect to be the formulator of truth, of emes. That emes should not be used in its perfect sense, coming from Shemayim, but that it's through the power of Chiddush, it's through the Lomdas, through the learning, and the originality of the Talmidei Chachomim of each generation, that concepts of Emes have to be developed for that generation, which is a discussion that we've had in previous Shiurim. Now I'm taking that perhaps a step further and saying that this Emes me'oretz titzmach, that Emes must grow from the earth, doesn't mean only from the creative minds of the Talmidei Chachomim of our generation, but emes me'oretz titzmach, that emes must grow from the earth, means exactly that. That in our perception of halacha, in our study of halacha, we must see halacha not as the compulsion of a system designed by the Ribbono Shel Olam to be imposed on a foreign environment. This foreign material environment, which is so anti-spiritual and so far from Torah and from Ruchnius, we have to take the Torah and impose it on the environment. That's not the meaning at all. Emes me'oretz titzmach. We have to use our understanding of halacha to grow the emes out of the earth, to develop it out of our environments, out of our situations, out of our circumstances, to be able to perceive that truth, to be able to see the emes ha-Torah in our environments, to be able to understand it with such accuracy that we're able to develop from our understanding of the environment what the Torah really requires of us, what's true and what's false. When we study the animals, we should be able to study them in a way that leads us to the conclusion that the way the cat behaves is tzniustik, and the way the animals behave is not. That the way the pigeon behaves is with family loyalty, the way the others is not the good way to behave. Although the majority of animals have bad middos, and it's only one animal that has the good middah, we should have the ability to learn from the one animal with a good middah, not from the majority with the bad middahs. We should perceive our environment with such purity that we're able to see the emes in our environment, that we can see halacha building up from life, rather than being imposed upon life. And so it is within ourselves as well, as being part of that whole system. But halacha is not a system which has to be artificially compelled upon us to the point where we start acting like puppets that have really no kind of connection with our natural environment. But that operating within our natural environment, we should be able to develop the halachic insight within ourselves, that it becomes part of our natural selves. That it becomes part of the way we see things. That it becomes part of the way we analyze things. And I remember I learned to drive in England. And one of the things they emphasize a great deal is what to do when you get into a skid. Because that happens very often when you're driving in England. And I remember asking my driving instructor what the point was. There's a list of about 12 things to do when you get into a skid. And I remember saying to him, tell me, when you get into a skid, do you start thinking through the 12 things? Well, so you sit in an exam and they ask you to reel off the 12 things. What do you do when you get into a skid? And if you leave one of them out, you fail. Well, what's the big thing? When you get into a skid, you pray and you do what you'll do and you hope for the best. You're not going to remember the 12 things. And he just smiled. And it didn't take very long when I got into my first skid. And I reacted intuitively, as everybody does in that situation, but when I analyzed it afterwards, I'd gone through each of those 12 steps. And that wasn't just because of intuition, that was because of training. And that's what training is. Training in halacha means that ultimately it becomes part of you. That's the way you respond, that's the way you act. Not because it's artificial and compelled, but because you've understood it so thoroughly that that's the correct way to see the world, that's the correct way to respond to the world. As Pinchas himself teaches us, Eloroa Maise, what was unique about the way Pinchas responded was Roa Maise, he looked at the action, he looked at you at Zimri. And he looked at that Midianite princess, and he saw what they were doing, and he understood and analyzed what they were doing. Venizkar halacha. And then the halacha became so clear that under those circumstances, as complex as they are, there's only one thing to do, and that's kanoim poiginboy. And that was the important contribution that Pinchas made to us. That one has to be able to sometimes understand that halacha has to be reasoned from the circumstance, and by a true and careful analysis of the circumstance, by a person who has been schooled and trained in halachic reasoning, in halachic analysis, and in halachic lifestyle. Such a person analyzing his situation truly will reach a conclusion as to what is halachically appropriate.